Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger. Today's show features another Debbie, Debbie Solaris, who's a galactic historian, ET contactee, Akashic record starseed guide, and starseed intuitive. The Dare to Dream podcast has been nominated for two People's Choice Podcast Awards. For a Webby Award, we recently won the Coalition of Visionary Resources Best Podcast and Radio Show Award in Denver, and were listed in Welp Magazine as one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year. I want to thank our wonderful folks who support us every month. And that is our sponsors, Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do beautiful energy work out into the world. You can take a course. You can become a facilitator anywhere in the world. Go to Dr. Dane here, HEER.com or AccessConsciousness.com. I'm Debbie Dashinger. I run a visibility media hub. I teach people just like you how to write a highly engaging book. I also have a fully done for the author international best-selling book launch program. And the third wheel of what I do around visibility is show you how to be interviewed on radio and podcasts with massive results. I've got a 5-day challenge about to open up for only $19. If you want to learn how to be interviewed, highly recommend it. Lots of folks are signing up, and for good reason. I'm going to show you the system in 5 days how to do this. Just go to my Facebook page, Debbie Dashinger, and you'll see the details there. And I look forward to working with you. So today we're talking with Debbie Solaris, ET contactee, interdimensional traveler, and galactic historian. Debbie awakened to her true star lineage and higher calling through her ancestral connection with the Akashic Records. She's been receiving downloads of galactic historical information and universal spiritual knowledge ever since. Debbie offers visually appealing media, multimedia rich classes on extraterrestrial life and culture, galactic history, and ancient civilizations, as well as starseed and lightworker enrichment workshops in the Front Range area of Colorado. Debbie is also a certified Akashic Records reader and gifted intuitive, using information channeled from her Arcturian and Pleiadian guides to heal and assist others on their own spiritual journeys. To learn more about her, go to her name, DebbieSolaris.com. It's DebbieSolaris.com. And I welcome the amazing Debbie Solaris to Dare to Dream. Great to have you.
It's great to be here, and it's great to connect with another Debbie. I love it. Absolutely. So the Debbies are on in the house today. So
Debbie and Debbie show today. We're definitely delivering.
Yeah.
Speaking of names, thank you.
Yeah.
Solaris means pertaining to the sun or solar. Is that your real name?
It is not my real name. I have a whole story behind how I ended up with that name. I used to work for public health in El Paso County, which is in Colorado Springs, and I didn't want my managers and coworker knowing that I did this kind of woo-woo work on the side. So I came up with an alias so they couldn't research and find me online under my real name. So the way we came up with Solaris was a friend of mine did my astrological chart, and I'm a sun sign Leo, and the sun is very prominent in my chart. So she suggested Solaris, and I thought, okay, that sounds kind of catchy, you know? So I've been going by that ever since for my professional name, but my real name is something completely different. So it's just because I wanted to stay anonymous, I guess is why I came up with that name.
It's so catchy. And I love that story.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that you were working in public health, but initially, years ago, you worked in the military. You were
That's
also
correct.
In the IT industry.
Right.
And this is all before you had the awakening. So how was it for you? How was that transition going from being one being and then having something significant happen and coming out on the other end?
Oh, totally. Yeah, that was a wild ride. I tell you what, it was wild. I was a very unawakened, very ordinary, non-talented, I don't know, just unpsychic kind of person. You know, I mean, just a very, very, I guess, 3D kind of person before my awakening. And I had kind of a very dramatic awakening. Like most people, they're on the path for like 20, 30 years, you know, they're, you know, slowly getting into the extraterrestrial realm of thing, you know, spirituality. But with me, it was very dramatic. As you mentioned, I am a military veteran. I was in the Navy for 6 years, served as a hospital corpsman / preventive medicine tech. And that's how I got into environmental health as my career. I also worked in the IT industry for a few years. I was a technical writer and instructional designer for a few years there, and had a very kind of ordinary life. I mean, I was, you know, I was brought up not really, we didn't really talk about paranormal stuff. We didn't talk about UFOs. I didn't have any exposure to this until I started dating my now husband, who is into paranormal and into ufology. So he actually got me exposed to this, but even then I was very skeptical. You know, I didn't really believe that, you know, UFOs existed. I thought it was some sort of natural phenomena that was unexplained. So my awakening started in May 2012 when I had my own extraterrestrial contact experience. And it was very dramatic. I have to say that my experience was very life-changing. I mean, I just did like a complete 180. I went from being a non-believer to being a total believer, you know. So in 2012, there was a lot of changes in our reality. There was a lot of personal changes I was going through and a lot of transition. I was really concerned about the state of our planet. Like, where are we heading towards? Why do things seem to be getting worse instead of better? So I sent out this massive prayer to the universe. I mean, I just sent this prayer out asking for assistance for planet Earth. And I sent it to every single high dimensional being I could think of, whether they be Jesus, Mother Mary, the angels, you know, galactic brothers and sisters. I didn't care. I was just like, you know, get it out there, you know, send it masters, you know. And I didn't hear anything for 2 weeks. I was just like, okay, you know, another prayer I had that didn't really have an answer to it. But 2 weeks after I sent out that prayer, I had a minor back surgery. It was like a laser surgery. And then I a few days after that, I, you know, went to bed as normal. And when I came to, I was in a completely different reality. I knew that I wasn't in a dream because everything was so crystal clear. It was very real. I mean, it's like when you're in the higher dimensions, colors are more brilliant. The details are so sharp. I mean, it's hard to explain. It's like, it's like HD TV, you know, high definition TV, but even beyond that, I mean, it's like super sharp, very, very crystal clear. And it's like you could see auras and colors around everything. And I knew I was on board some sort of a craft. It was some sort of a starship. And I wasn't afraid. I mean, I just kind of was taking in, okay, this is a craft. And then I had encounters with extraterrestrial beings. I found out later they were Arcturians from Arcturus. I didn't even know what that was until, you know, and it felt like I was on board the ship for a very, very long time. So they answered a lot of my questions. It was very benevolent. I didn't feel like I was abducted so much as I was a guest on their ship. Like I was just there to have my questions answered, to get activated on some level. I had encounters with other extraterrestrial beings on this, on board the same ship. And then when I came to, it was the next day, you know, in my bedroom. So I kind of went through this whole experience. I was back in my bedroom, and I knew at that point that life was never going to be the same after that. You know, it was just like somehow I had completely changed. And in what way, I didn't even know back then, but I completely changed. And I was definitely a believer after that. So that's just my story in a nutshell. I know we have an hour, so I'm trying to keep it relatively
short. Were those people, do you know, aboard this spacecraft, were they family? Were they, what is the connection? Why that starship?
My understanding is that, and I didn't know this. I mean, I always thought I was 100%, you know, Earth human, you know, and I, you know, I come from Italian heritage, you know, so I knew that I was Italian, you know, but I never knew of my star lineage. And evidently these Arcturian beings told me that I was part of their family, you know, that I had volunteered to be on Earth, and that because of my prayer, they realized I was ready to get the next level of information, and that I was here to be on a mission, you know, on a mission to share information to the people of planet Earth. And they even told me like something crazy, like I came from a long line of Arcturian scientists, ambassadors, and teachers, I think it was something like that. It was like teachers. So it was kind of like, wow, I came from this, you know, really elevated group of beings. And they even showed me genetically how this all connected even on Earth. Like they showed me a ship crash landing in central Italy, like during ancient times. And it was an Arcturian ship, and they had started the Etruscan civilization, and that my physical lineage came from that. And so it was just amazing, you know. It's just so much detail, you know. So
how did your relationship with your husband change? So you come, you have this awakening, and you're a non-believer in a relationship with a man who's totally into ufology. So what, it must be amazing for both of you now.
At first, he didn't believe me. He thought I was having a crazy dream. But then he started realizing, I guess, as I was sharing my story, I didn't actually share my story for 2 years. I think, I don't think I really shared my story publicly until maybe 2015, or I think it was around a time when I was starting to take a lot of spiritual classes, and I was starting to meet people. And there was a group called Paranormal Talks that asked me to present in Denver, you know, my story as part of a panel of ET contactees. And I was really afraid. I was like, oh God, I don't know if I want to do this, but I agreed to it, and it totally propelled me towards my journey of being, you know, this ET contactee representative. But getting back to your question about my relationship with my husband, I would say it definitely brought us closer. It definitely, it felt like at that point, we were on a mission together, you know, that we were, you know, we had a soul contract to be like a spiritual couple that was going to help expand consciousness on the planet. So it did have a positive impact on our relationship, and still has to this day. We still feel very connected, and for many reasons, but especially over, you know, our desire to see ascension happen on the planet. So it's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah. And I relate to that. My partner is the one who brought me into this, because I was same, complete non-believer.
And, yeah. So you're as similar to me then, it sounds like.
I didn't go on a space ship. I would have loved that. Yeah. But something turned. And when it turned, I just became a sponge. Like I still am. And so I'm going to ride this. I just feel like it's all divine. I truly do. Things had to happen before this for me awakening.
Yeah, gotcha.
And you were mentioning about your prayer, the ascended masters and the angels, et cetera. And you included Jesus, Mother Mary. So let's talk a little bit about Yeshua. Yeshua, if I understand, was a ninth dimensional galactic being. Is that true? And if so, which planet was Jesus and Magdalene from?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I have like a whole, I got a whole download over that one day. And I love sharing the story because it made so much sense to me after, you know, because, you know, as I went through a, I was somebody that went through a lot of training, spiritual training, because I went to a Christian university. So I took a lot of Bible classes. So I've read the Bible several times. And I was always kind of wondering, like, you know, these beings, you know, I mean, these, you know, these biblical figures, they seem so advanced, but yet they live such humble lives on earth. How could that be? You know, how did they get this information? You know, how were they able to, you know, transform reality, you know, during their lifetimes? So because of my access to the Akashic records, my understanding with Yeshua is that he is a ninth dimensional ascended master. He's connected mostly with the star system of Sirius, okay, this which is in the constellation of Canis Major. Mother Mary is actually, but he's kind of like a Syrian Pleiadian mix, because Mother Mary is actually from the Pleiades star system. And the star system that she's specifically from is called Pleione, which is a very kind of little known star system within the Pleiades cluster. You know, so the Pleiades is like a cluster of stars. And Pleione is a very tiny little system. It's kind of off to the periphery of this cluster, and it's closest to Atlas, which is another one of the Pleiadian stars. But Pleione was set to be a sanctuary space. It was always a place for Pleiadians to spend time there. So it had very little technology, very little sense of civilization. It was mainly just a place for Pleiadians to go to heal and to work on their spiritual connections, you know, or their spirituality. And so, and it was a very kind of beautiful, peaceful star system. So it made sense that Mother Mary would have this kind of energy. Now, Mary Magdalene, on the other hand, she connected with Yeshua through Sirius. And my understanding with her is that she represents the highest order of the dark. So she kind of comes in with dark and with dark feminine energy, and let me see if I can quantify that to a point where it makes sense. So I'm not saying that she's a dark being, but what I'm saying about her is that she's actually has an Anunnaki lineage. So, which is kind of bizarre, okay, but it actually makes sense because she's representing the highest order of the dark, and Yeshua is representing the highest order of the light. And then they're combining together to have this integration of the divine feminine and masculine, also the light and the dark. And
is it like yin yang put together?
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way. That's a great, I would say, description of it. So, so they're kind of representing kind of the integration of these polarities that are becoming integrated. So that's why it was their relationship was so important on planet Earth. So she's representing a lineage, one lineage, and Yeshua is representing another lineage, and they're coming together, which is really kind of beautiful. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing here on Earth is more of an integration of these polarities, to where it becomes more well integrated. Right now, Earth is kind of struggling through lot of, I would say, you know, opposites, you know, where, you know, there's men against women, you know, there's Democrats against Republicans, there's, white people against Black people. I don't know. It's just like a bunch of polarity.
Duality. Yeah.
So duality consciousness. And Yeshua and Mary Magdalene represent the love consciousness, the Christ consciousness, the coming together of all these polarities into a sense of oneness. And I don't believe that Yeshua actually died during the crucifixion. I think most likely he survived that and ended up in India and, you know, studying with the Buddhist monks and with the Hindu gurus. So he spent like 30 years on earth after the so-called crucifixion, studying, these other religions, integrating, and eventually, and I think they talk about this a little bit in the Da Vinci Code. I mean, there, you know, some of that information is actually quite accurate, but it kind of romanticized it a little bit, but it was actually quite accurate. So I do think he had an impact on planet Earth for quite a while. I do believe he's an ascended master. His Syrian name is Sananda. I think that's been, you know, mentioned, you know, a few times by different folks. And he chooses to incarnate to help expand consciousness when the time is correct. It almost seemed like during the time that he was on Earth, like the messages that he shared were very beautiful, but it seemed like the messages got very corrupted, you know, through groups that wanted to capitalize on it and wanted to control people, you know.
Let me ask you, so here they are from other star systems,
yeah,
coming to Earth, part of the mission.
Yeah.
But why religion? What is their connection to religion?
You mean to extraterrestrials or?
Specifically to Yeshua or Sananda and to Magdalene.
I think that was the vehicle in which they could share their message. I don't think they really were on board with religion as, I mean, even Yeshua, I think, had its butted heads with the religious leaders of that time, you know, because, you know, they had all these rules and regulations, and he was saying, all you need to do is just love your neighbor, you know, it's not that complicated, you know, because they were just making it really convoluted. But I think it was more in lines of, it was a vehicle for them to share their message in a way that people would be receptive to, you know. So if he would have just gone out there and said, you know, screw religion, you know, I'm just going to share my message, I think it would have been more difficult for the peoples of that time to accept what he had to share. So they used it mainly as a vehicle of spreading information. But actually, when I was on board the starship with the Arcturians, I asked them a lot of questions about religion because I was brought up Roman Catholic and I was always really confused by religion and just seemed like there was a lot of, I don't know, just incongruencies with God is love, but yet God punishes people all the time. I don't understand that, you know, but what they told me was that religion was a man-made construct, that in the higher realms, there is no religion. You know, they have a direct connection with source. They don't need this kind of middleman to dictate to them what they should believe. You know, it's all about our own individual connections with source. So when they told me that, it was kind of mind-blowing for me at the time, because like I said, I went through a Christian university. I was raised Roman Catholic, but then it made a lot of sense. And I was like, I was finally at peace, you know, with, okay, now I feel like I can be spiritual without having to align with a specific man-made religion of some sort.
Amazing. I'm thinking, actually, such a strange thought, but it's making me laugh. There is you know, in the medicine world, the plant medicine world, there is something, I think it's called iboga. And it's iboga, iboga. I haven't done it, but it's apparently something that you take and you lay down for like 32 hours. I think you're awake and you don't want to move much because it can make you feel nauseous. However, for those 32 hours, sort of in and out, it vacillates. You apparently are connected with something very powerful, your higher self source, and you can ask any question. And people say it is profound. And then there's Debbie Solaris, who doesn't have to do all of that and just sits down and taps in like that.
Yeah, no, I just kind of tap in and get crazy information. I don't know.
That's so cool.
Actually, my husband and I tried DMT once, and it was a wild experience. It wasn't as wild as ayahuasca. I mean, a lot of people have done that, but
I've done it.
But it lasts like maybe 10 minutes. You're like in this, you know, alternate, you know, consciousness. But my experience was very profound. My husband got scared and was fighting against the colors and the images that came through. Mine was very, very profound. I saw a lot of sacred geometry, definitely the colors, but I actually saw Egyptian gods. I don't know why, but not the well-known ones. It was more like Sobek or the hippopotamus goddess. I mean, it was like, that was my first trip. And then the second trip was, I did two trips, but the second one was even more profound, where I was flying through multiple pyramids, and I was flying with Horus, the god of the sun. You know, it was the son of Osiris and Isis, and Horus and I eventually flew into the sun, and it expanded into multiple suns, which is kind of interesting because my last name is Solaris, which is represents the sun, right? So for some reason in that trip, I was connected with Horus. So I don't know if it's a past life thing. I don't know if it's, you know, just the archetype.
Okay, I'm going to book a reading for you with Debbie Solaris so she can tell you.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll be kind of, yeah. So I like to work with archetypes a lot. I've always been interested in mythological stories, and I integrate like a lot of different modalities into my Akashic readings. So I might be bringing in numerology or the twin flame journey or astrology. I mean, I just kind of integrate a lot of stuff, but it's just to bring some sort of sense of meaning to just the extraterrestrial galactic history, you know? So how does that connect with us? You know, that sort of thing. But thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. I don't know if I know all the answers, but I'll try to get something usually.
Well, I think when we get to the second half of this, people are going to really see, I mean, the information you pull in it's very impressive.
And oh, thank you. Thank you.
Wonderful for these folks, for all of us who are so interested. And before I get to that, I'm curious, for people like us who would really like to contact extraterrestrials or interdimensional beings, do you have advice for us on how to proceed, what to look out for, etc.?
So this is kind of a multi-pronged approach, but I know when I was trying to connect with my higher self, my higher guides, my star family, they were always telling me to meditate. And I was like, okay, that's kind of ordinary. And I was like, whatever. And so I said, I hate meditation. And my guides are crazy. Okay. My guides, Arcturian guides, they'll make you do crazy stuff. Okay. So my guys are like, okay, you hate meditation? Well, we're going to send you to Crestone, Colorado to spend time with the Zen Buddhist monks so you can really learn how to meditate. And I was like, what? And I was like, what are you telling me to do? And so they told me to do this. So I was like, okay. So I booked, you know, some time with the Zen Buddhist monks. My husband and I went, and we both for 5 days meditated with the Zen Buddhist monks every evening and every morning, you know, so we learned proper meditation techniques. Meditation is probably key to connecting with your inner self. Your inner self in your higher self is part of the galactic realm. So your inner self will usually have some sort of representation of, okay, maybe they're connected with Lyra, or maybe they're connected with Arcturus or Pleiades, you know, or whatever system that you connect with. So that's a good way. Keeping your vibration high is key. Your guides do not want to have to drag you from the ground and pull you up, okay? They want you to try to meet them halfway. So it's kind of funny, when I was first starting off, they were telling, that my guides send song messages. So they were sending me songs like Higher Love by Steve Winwood, you know, and Keep Going Higher, or, you know, I don't know, it was just crazy songs that had the word higher in it. So they would keep on telling me to go higher. And I didn't understand what they meant until, oh, they meant vibration. Oh, okay. So there's many ways that you can raise your vibration. And a lot of it is keeping away from things that'll bring down your vibration. I think humans, a lot of us humans are naturally high vibrational, but we're in very toxic environments that pull our vibration down. So we have to be very conscious of what we surround our environments with, you know, and that includes food, you know, water, entertainment, you know, so a lot of it will have an impact. I tell people, don't watch TV anymore, because there's a lot of subliminal programming in, you know, mainstream TV. I can hear it a lot of times, so I have a hard time watching TV shows because I can hear the subliminal programming and it bothers me. So I can maybe do 30 minutes and then I'm like, oh no, I gotta take a break, you know. But especially mainstream news, a lot of subliminal programming on that. They're designed to keep our vibrations down. So clean humor helps a lot. So I know when I start feeling down, I'll just watch some really clean humor, just start laughing, and that always brings my vibration up. So there's real easy, fun ways you can raise your vibration. The other thing too is setting intention. I think part of my prayer story was about setting intention. Like, you know, I wanted to be part of a solution to the planet's problems, you know, so I wanted to be of service. I think extraterrestrial guides and extraterrestrial beings really like it when we are other focused, you know, when we're wanting to be of service to others. That's when they're willing to connect with us more, rather than, oh, I just want to meet you guys because I'm curious, or I just want to meet you guys because, you know, you're so I can tell, you know, interesting stories to my friends, you know. If it's ego focused, they're not so apt to connect with us. But when we become other focused, when we want to be of service, then they're more apt to connect with us and, you know, really develop a relationship. So I don't know if that's along the lines of what you were looking for, but that's how I approach it anyway. But,
yeah, great. So humor. Yeah. And meditation with the Zen Buddhist monks, or?
Yeah, Zen Buddhist monks, yeah. There is actually a Zen Buddhist center in Crestone, Colorado. It's an amazing place. It's amazing. It's like, my husband calls it the land out of time. It's like time stands still when you're in Crestone. So it's actually quite similar. The energies there, it's kind of like within an energy vortex, very similar to Sedona, but not as commercial as Sedona. It's very backwoods. I mean, it's very, it's just a small little town, nothing fancy about it, but the energies there are amazing.
You do a lot of work with older Blu-rays, who you call first wave volunteers. So these are people who are in their 60s and 70s. And this comes about in your Akashic work with the indigos. Can you talk about who the Blue Rays actually are and how somebody can identify themselves as a Blue Ray?
Oh, that's a really, really interesting question. Thank you. I do work with all generations. Actually work quite a bit with third waivers as well as second waivers. But I think the reason why the first wave are attracted to working with me is because I'm of their generation. You know, I'm a first waiver myself. You know, I'm kind of tail end of it, but I just kind of squeaked into the first wave category, I guess. But I think it's because the relatability factor of it. I think Shekinah Rose, she's a sound healer out of Sedona, and she does she has a lot of work with Blue Rays. I like to work with Blue Rays because I understand their story. I mean, a lot of them are awakening much later in life. You know, they're feeling like they're having to catch up. You know, so I relate to their story because I didn't awaken until I was 50 years old, or a couple of months before 50. I'm now about to turn 60 next Monday. You know, so on Monday I'm turning 60. You know, so it's been a decade of this wild ride into spirituality. But to answer your question about Blue Rays, most Blue Rays are star seeds that are coming in with a very sensitive energy, super sensitive, super psychic, super empathic. Most of them come from the Sirius and Pleiades star system. We'll get a few from maybe Andromeda or from Arcturus, but I would say the vast majority of them are aligned with Sirius and Pleiades. Most of my first wave, we're actually doing a study on this right now. Most first waivers are Lyra, Sirius, Pleiades lineage. A lot of second waivers are more Arcturian, and then third waivers, we're seeing a lot of Andromedans coming in. And there's reasons for that. So these folks are the way showers. They're the ones that are laying the foundation for the ascension process. Most of them are healers, teachers, and spiritual guides. They're not system busters. They're not system builders. They are here to be healers. They're here to be guides. They're teachers. And so they don't carry the same technical abilities as, say, second wave and third wave, you know, volunteers, you know, star seeds, you know. So that's why second wave we're seeing, you know, okay, there's a lot of Orion and Arcturian beings coming, you know, star seeds coming in. And then with third wave, we're just seeing this, gosh, I mean, it's like a lot of Andromedans. Oh my God. It was like, Andromedans are very technical. So it makes sense that they're system builders. They're going to be coming in the third wave. But yeah, Blue Rays, I have a special, connection with Blue Rays because, I understand their journey. It's a more difficult journey, I think, than second or third wave journeys because they've gone through a lot more programming. They've gone through a lot more conditioning, you know, because they were born in the 50s, you know, 40s, 50s, and early 60s. They're having to fight all this programming to become awakened. And they tend to become more awakened later in life. So a lot of times they're feeling like they're playing spiritual catch up. But a lot of them do quite well once they're on the journey. They do amazing work.
So let's talk about galactic history to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of star seeds and Earth volunteers feel this resonance with ancient civilizations like Atlantis, like Lemuria. What is the significance for us regarding Atlantis and Lemuria?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I can go into a lot of galactic history, the backdrop of that information, but I think I'll start with, I guess I'll just give this background, kind of an overview. Okay, so Earth is a living library. It was always meant to be a composite of of DNA from many different star systems. We're at least 22, as far as my understanding. So Earth has been influenced by 22 different star races, including Draco, including Zeta Reticuli, including Sirius C. I mean, we're talking about a whole combination of stuff. Okay, so there was extraterrestrial beings who were visiting Earth even before Atlantean and Lemurian times, trying to colonize Earth. You know, just trying to see, you know, bringing in DNA from their systems, seeing if it'll integrate on planet Earth. So that's why we have so much diversity here on Earth with environments, you know, plants, animals, humans, everything. Lemuria was the first civilization that was developed by extraterrestrial beings. So these were civilizations that were founded by extraterrestrial beings. But Lemuria was more founded by Andromedans and Arcturians. Okay, so this was a colonization in a continent that used to exist in the Pacific Ocean. So there used to be a big continent in the middle of the Pacific Ocean called Mu or Lemuria. So Lemuria was supposed to be a representation of divine feminine energy. It was supposed to be low technology, high spirituality. It was the only civilization on Earth that was truly fifth dimensional, so that we had fifth dimensional reality with Lemuria. The reason why they didn't integrate a lot of technology was because they were all about the setting of intention. You know, like if you set intention, you should be able to create anything. You should be able to create your reality. Okay. And that's true even today. You know, I think even today we can set intentions. You know, there's the law of attraction, the secret, you know, all those, you know, lines of thought, you know, that are revolving around this. So Lemurians didn't really feel like they needed much technology, you know, because they didn't really need it. They were able to create whatever they wanted. The civilization was very kind of Polynesia-like. So it was very kind of free-flowing, you know, it was very, it wasn't, I don't know, there was very kind of magical aspects to their civilization that we didn't see with Atlantis, okay? Now, Atlantis was developed as a representation of divine masculine energy. So everything that we create as far as duality follows the divine masculine, divine feminine template, because that's the initial splitting of source was as mother goddess consciousness and father god consciousness. So that's why we see, you know, this polarity between masculine and feminine energies. And we see that even throughout galactic history, you know, even off planet. But Atlantis was created to be, and this was founded by Sirians and Pleiadians and Lyrians. It was supposed to be high technology and also high spirituality. Okay, so they're integrating more technology, but Atlantis got infiltrated by, I would say, malevolent Maldekian and Orion factions that were escaping Orion or escaping Maldek. Maldek was a planet that used to exist between Jupiter and Mars, and now is the asteroid belt because they blew themselves up, okay? So these factions were trying to integrate Earth, and they corrupted Atlantis. That's why Atlantis eventually fell, you know, and so did Lemuria, actually. Lemuria also fell. Egypt was kind of like the integration of these two energies. So a lot of starseeds feel a connection with Egypt because many of us have had past lives in Egypt. Many of us as starseeds either started off in Lemuria or Atlantis. And then when that got destroyed, we started having incarnations in Egypt. So I would say more so than any other ancient civilization, Egypt is the one that when I connect with somebody's records, I'm like, holy crap, there's another life in Egypt, you know? So, and many of us were priestesses or healers, because we're coming in with this, very sensitive energy, very empathic energy, and many of us come in with, you know, skills in these areas. So we were always part of the clergy or part of the spiritual, you know, realm, you know, in those times, because those are the skill sets we come in with. But I do get a fair number of starseeds that are also quite technical. So we have that as well. So that's a galactic history, or at least Earth history in a nutshell, these ancient times. And we're talking about, you know, I mean, I think Earth history, as far as the timing of it, I think it's all off. Lemuria existed tens of thousands of years ago, and so did Atlantis. And Egypt existed, you know, I think, you know, the Sphinx was supposedly built 10,000 years ago, not 4,000 years ago, like what archaeologists tell us. So I think Earth is much more ancient than you know what history would like us to believe. So,
is there an important connection? Are a lot of us here who were in Atlantis, who were in Lemuria, and is there some connection? Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think Edgar Cayce talked about this. I'm a big Edgar Cayce fan. I mean, I love Dolores Cannon. I love Edgar Cayce. They're like my predecessors. Okay. So I'm hoping, you know, in whatever way I can help keep this work going, you know, so that's kind of how I see it. But Edgar Cayce did a lot of work on people in the United States during the turn of the century. This was last century, okay? During the work that he was doing, this healing work, he discovered that a lot of people had past lives in Atlantis. You know, it was like, wow, it's like every other person I'm doing readings for, you know, or doing, you know, this, you know, work with, you know, this healing work, has a past life in Atlantis. My understanding from his work and also what I've seen myself in the Akashic records is that a lot of us that have had past Atlantean lives chose to incarnate specifically in the United States, Canada, or Europe, because those were the civilizations that are the most like Atlantis. Actually, United States is called a New Atlantis, okay? So whatever karmic situation that we created in Atlantis, we're supposed to be able to work through today and reverse our karma or close a old karmic loop, or try to reverse the mistakes that we made in Atlantis in this lifetime. So a lot of us are coming in with connections to Atlantis. I do get a fair number of folks that also have connections with Lemuria. It's not so much karma with the Lemurians, maybe a little bit of it, but it's more about recreating that divine feminine energy that Lemuria is supposed to represent. So a lot of us that have had Lemurian lives, like myself, we're trying to really get Earth into this push towards the fifth dimension, because we're trying to bring in this divine feminine energy that's going to propel us into a more spiritual age, you know, on this planet, where we're going to see the age of enlightenment, you know, come to pass. And I think it's just around the corner. I mean, a lot of people ask me, do you have a timeline with this? And I said, yeah, I think it's going to happen within the next 10 years. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of dramatic changes on planet Earth.
That's exciting to hear.
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that, because I don't want to be here and not see the Earth ascend. Because I don't know about you, but I mean, you're doing the work too. But it'll be nice to see the fruition of all our effort. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
the question that you asked of the universe back in 2012, I think it still pertains. You know,
oh, totally.
It's very worrisome. So to hear you say that, I think we're all aware. This can go a couple of different ways. I think those of us who are spiritually aware can feel like the underbelly is continually being exposed, painful as it is, but in order to ameliorate it so we can move forward. So that's wonderful and very interesting. So I want to talk about Antares, which is the brightest star in the constellation of Scorpio. It's about 136 light years away in distance. And Antarians, I understand, are mostly non-physical.
Yeah, they are non-physical.
What is the Antarian energy? What are they about?
Yeah, I just did a reading for a person who is actually from Antares. I rarely get star seeds from Antares. Occasionally I do, but these are very high vibrational folks usually. I mean, but Antares is a portal. Okay. So it is an actual star, and it's a huge orange reddish star. And it is the major star in the constellation of Scorpio, like you mentioned. And it's very close to galactic center in our galaxy. So galactic center is between Scorpio and Sagittarius. So there's that space between, and if you see on my wall there, there's a big blue square. That's my star map. So galactic center is right in the middle of that. But it was a portal. So it's one of two major stargates in our galaxy. The first one being Antares, the second one being Arcturus, which is where I'm from apparently. But these two stargates have very different functions. Antares is a portal. So it connects the Andromeda galaxy, which is our mother galaxy, with the Milky Way. So our galaxy was actually created by the Andromeda galaxy's soul family that decided they wanted to create a kind of a simulation of their galaxy, but something that was slightly lower dimensional so that they can, it could hold frequencies that would sustain physical life, you know, whereas Andromeda galaxy is too high vibrational for that. But these were co-creator beings that created stars and nebulas and planets, okay? Now these beings came, that created the Milky Way, came in through the Antares Stargate to help propel this experimentation of separation from source, descent into physicality, okay? About the Antarians, my understanding about them is they were very high vibrational beings. Initially, they kind of present themselves as mantid type beings. They're not necessarily human looking at all. They look more mantid or like mantis insectoid beings. At least that's what they used to look like.
Does that mean that they're healers?
They are healers, yeah. They're healers and they're gatekeepers. So they maintain the stargate. Okay. And only the highest vibrational beings can pass through Antares. Now Arcturus, everybody can pass through Arcturus because Arcturus is the stargate of souls. Okay, so Arcturus is the stargate where souls are processed after an incarnation. So they get prepped for the next incarnation. You know, so when a soul decides to incarnate into a physical realm, regardless of whether it's on Earth or the Pleiades or someplace else, they're going to get processed in Arcturus, which means that they'll go through a life review. They'll work with their guides on, you know, what goals are they going to set for their next lifetime. And then they get a choice. Usually they'll get a choice of several different timelines or lifetimes they can choose. Earth people kind of got stuck in a false reincarnation matrix for many, many thousands of years. So they were never
able. That before. What does that mean exactly?
My understanding is there was malevolent beings like the, you know, the elites or the reptilians or whatever you want to call them, the deep space. They created this false reincarnation matrix where they were using human energy to feed off of. So they didn't want humans to evolve. So when they would die, they wouldn't go to Arcturus. They would go towards the false light. And then they would just get recycled into another human life without going through a proper life review. Okay. And this was happening with humans for thousands upon thousands of years. My understanding is that this false reincarnation matrix is being dismantled. So humans that now pass away can get processed properly in Arcturus. But so it was like totally, to me, this seems very, I don't know, horrible, because you're infringing on people's free will and freedom, you know. You know, these souls, you know, these souls don't ever get the chance to evolve. They don't ever get the chance to, you know, to choose, you know, the type of lives that they want to have. So I'm glad to hear that it's being dismantled, but the Arcturians actually do help these souls be able to evolve with each level. So each incarnation, that's why Arcturians are such great spiritual guides and teachers, because we help these souls to evolve to that next level with each incarnation. Sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent there.
That's really good. So yeah. Outside of what you just listed there, how else have the Arcturians assisted Earth as gatekeepers or gatekeepers?
Yeah, they are
higher realms and dimensions.
Arcturians have always been kind of the prototype of what Earth humans are ascending towards. So they've always had kind of an interest in the evolution of planet Earth, but they were always kind of like teachers and guides, you know. So I think a lot of Arcturian starseeds, they come in with that kind of ambassadorial energy of I'm here to be a teacher or a guide or on some level. But the other thing they came in with is they are the keeper of the Akashic records, my understanding is. That's why I have such a connection with the Akashic records, because my guides told me that I have a ancestral connection with it. But so they maintain the records, and they're kind of like the overseers of the project, the Earth project. So they're making sure that things don't get off the rails too much, you know. So they try not to intervene too much, but if things are kind of getting off the rails, they will intervene and try to assist to keep things more balanced. Okay. So that's an interesting question, but thanks.
So Andromeda, another place that you mentioned earlier, Andromeda Collection, I understand that there's at least 28 different races of beings. Mm-hmm. Some are humanoid, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
What do the life forms on Andromeda include?
Oh, gosh. There's so many that I don't even know all of them personally, but because usually when I'm doing Akashic readings, I'm reading for people that are of Lyran heritage, you know, so they're mostly humanoid. But my understanding is that there's non-physical beings, light beings, that are Andromedans from Andromeda Galaxy that also settled in the Andromeda constellation. They have amphibian beings. They have different beings that are not necessarily humanoid, but I know about the amphibians. I kind of call them the sea stars. I don't know, the Andromedan sea stars, but I don't know, it's just, they're kind of like the Andromedan version of a mermaid, I guess, you know, if you want to call it that. But so they have amphibian beings. They have, not really elementals, I guess. They have some elemental fairy-like beings. But there's, and there's even like a variety amongst the humanoid types, you know. So depending on what star system a humanoid species might live on might determine what their appearance is.
Right. Isn't there also like etheric and plasmic conscious life forms?
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like, there's like crystalline beings. There's beings that are plasma-like. I mean, there's so much variation in Andromeda that we, as Earth humans, have a hard time wrapping our minds around.
And they don't have prejudice there. Everybody's accepted.
I mean, it's a very evolved civilization.
Oh boy.
Sounds it's like women, it's a matriarchal society. Women are, there's a lot of women that are in positions of leadership. They're really highly respected. So a lot of Andromedan starseeds come to Earth and they're like, well, I'm not going to accept some man treating me like crap, you know, it's like, you know, so they're very independent types, you know, they kind of follow the beat of their own drummer kind of thing. And they don't like to listen to authority a lot of times. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
How do you say this? Andromedans?
Andromedans
are two basic earth types. And yeah. For people listening who might be curious, like, is that me? Can you talk about the distinctive types?
Yeah. There's the Andromeda galaxy folks that they're ancient souls. I kind of have this belief that I think we're all from Andromeda galaxy, like at some point, like we all kind of went through this massive evolution. But I have some folks that really carry that frequency, you know, so they're still connected to that Andromeda galaxy frequency. And they're usually love to work with energy. These are, you know, energy masters. Okay. And manifestation masters too. So they come in many different human variations. You know, it's kind of like, it's hard to really pinpoint when it's more from the frequency. Usually they have really bright auras and they're very forward thinking people, but they're also very devoted to the mission, you know, so they will have multiple incarnations on Earth sometimes, you know, they just kind of have this love. They're coming in with this great love of evolution, you know, that they're wanting to be a part of it. The other group, Andromedan group, that we see a lot is the Laran Andromedan group. So these are the Andromedan humanoids that were descendants of Laran refugees that escaped Lyra during the wars. Okay, so Lyra went through this horrible war with the draconian beings from Draco, and then these beings that escaped, some of them ended up in the Andromeda constellation. Their physicality changed a lot when they were in Andromeda because the environmental conditions there were so different. So, mm-hmm. So they became a kind of more elongated. They became kind of very kind of lanky looking, blue skinned because there was a lot of copper on their planets. So everything they ingested had a lot of copper in it. So their skin turned blue. And they have a very distinct look. I mean, it's very kind of ethereal, kind of otherworldly, but human looking. They say that Andromedan women were supposedly the most beautiful women in the galaxy because they were so otherworldly looking that, you know, they just carried this unique beauty. And a lot of my Andromedan starseed women are indeed very beautiful. You know, they have a lot of physical beauty along with inner beauty, but they, even more so than Pleiadians, I think a lot of people think that, oh, well, Pleiadians, they're so physically beautiful, and they are, don't get me wrong, you know, but Andromedans are even beyond that. So, a lot of interesting correlations with these star races. A lot of us are all connected. We're all connected to each other. We all came from source, you know, we're all different iterations of source energy, you know, having various expressions of ourselves throughout multiple lifetimes. So it's always kind of interesting when I do a reading for somebody, they always think, oh, maybe I'm just from the Pleiades. And I was like, oh no, Pleiades is just one place you're at. Like, you're in many places, you know? So I help them kind of pinpoint maybe the star systems that had the most impact on their soul journey. But so there might be some people that identify more with the Pleiades, some that might identify more with Arcturus or with Orion, for instance. But we've all are ancient souls, and we have all gone through many, many different lifetimes and many systems. So our stories are quite unique and interesting.
I love that, because I used to always think, you know, here on Earth, we have something like ancestry.com. You can find out your basic lineage on Earth, very basic.
Yeah.
And that doesn't interest me. It's like, where can you do the swipe for the galactic history?
Oh, yeah. I think that might be our junk DNA, right? What they call the junk DNA. I think that's all probably extraterrestrial DNA that I know our scientists don't have a capacity to identify yet, but it's interesting they call it junk DNA. It's like, that's not junk DNA. That's probably our galactic DNA. So,
it's psychoactive at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like let's get that activated so we can really meet our potential here on Earth.
You mentioned the planet that I'm most fascinated by. Lyra.
Lyra.
The band that I'm in, that I sing in, is called Lions of Lyra or Lyra.
No,
I'm into it. So yeah. The first two races that were created in the Lyran star system were feline and avian.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Races. That's right. Yeah.
Can you talk about the felines, Ger, and the avian and what they were like, their qualities of being or gifts?
No, sure. Love to. Yeah, I'm fascinated with those groups too, even though that's not my lineage, but I love it. But my understanding is that we live in a multi-universe reality where each universe goes through this separation from source. We go through this evolution of becoming more and more separated and lower dimensional, and then we return to source at some point. So it's kind of like an inverted bell curve where we're just going down, 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 and then we keep going, then we go back up. And Earth is kind of like point zero. So Earth, we're at the lowest point right now. So we can only go up from here, right? So, but getting back to your question about Lyra or Lyra, Lyra was created to be the backdrop for physical reality here in our universe. So these beings that were the co-creators of this physical reality actually came from other universes that had completed their cycle, you know. So feline beings actually, you know, the ethereal feline beings came from a different universe. So did the ethereal avian beings, you know. So they were coming in to create this new reality here in our universe, but then they started creating physical versions of themselves, you know. So initially they were etheric beings, you know, they didn't have physical bodies, but then they were creating physical versions of themselves that looked feline or they looked avian, you know, and they were incarnating in these forms in order to be able to experience physical reality. So this created a race of beings that eventually became hybridized. So they kept creating different versions of themselves. So that's why sometimes you'll see depictions of lion beings in Lyra that look very lion-like, you know, but then you see other versions of beings that maybe look more humanoid, but they might have some feline features, but they're not quite as feline looking, because there was quite a few, they were constantly creating versions of themselves that were going to be able to sustain physicality longer and longer. Because what was happening with some of these feline groups is that they were evolving too rapidly. So they had to hybridize themselves. So this is where we created the two human races, which was the white Lyrans, which was more the Caucasian version. And then you had the blue Vega people that lived around the star system of Vega, which is one of the biggest star in Lyra, which was more of a blue skinned race of people, you know. So a lot of darker skinned people have Vega genetics, you know, so they have dark skin because their genetics came from Vega. A lot of us that are more Caucasian, you know, we might have genetics that came from Lyra, you know, so the other parts of Lyra. But as far as the felines, they were very high vibrational beings. They liked to express themselves physically. They were very physically strong beings, very muscular beings, very ethical, very high ethics, very spiritual beings, very wise beings. Same with the avians. The avians were a little bit more elusive. They had a They were not quite directly involved with the genetic project. So that's why we don't see quite as much avian genetics amongst, you know, humans as much as the feline beings were, but they were also there, you know, as a part of this creation of the physical life here on in our galaxy and in our universe. So, fascinating question.
Thanks. Excuse me, I've got a quote from you, Debbie, which is, "Birds here on Earth are a gift from the higher dimensional avian beings to help regulate our electromagnetic atmosphere."
Yeah.
Can you break that down a little bit for us?
Yeah, so a lot of these beings, when I was talking about this Earth experimentation project, where we were, bringing DNA, like our ancestors, our galactic ancestors were bringing DNA to the planet, they always had a tendency to create other versions of themselves, like lesser versions of themselves. The felines did it with, a lot of the cat races, that you see here on Earth. Reptilians did it with the dinosaurs and then the reptilian, the reptiles, here on Earth. Avians did it mainly through, and I do think there's a connection between reptiles and birds, but that's a whole other conversation. But avians did it through creating versions of themselves because avians are aligned with frequency, okay? So they're frequency masters, okay? They're aligned with that energy. So the birds help kind of regulate frequency here on this earth. And that's their main purpose. And we have so many beautiful varieties of birds. I mean, I personally am a bird lover. I love that, here in my house, I can put out bird feeders and see all kinds of different species of birds. But it was almost like we couldn't have the electromagnetic regulation without the integration of these beings bringing in this energy. Cat beings, on the other hand, are very physical, so they're more of the physical world. I kind of feel like with avians, they're kind of like more, they're kind of like a bridge between, the ethers and the physical. So all of these creatures all play a part. They were all created for a purpose. And I think once humans realize that and we start respecting these beings, I think things will be a lot better here. It'll at least be a start anyway. I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
Sorry. Are there 7 to 9 foot tall winged humanoids existing in higher dimensions? And if so, who are they?
Okay. Those beings are part of the angelic realm. I really believe that the Elohim that was talked about, that helped create Lyra and that were, part of the creation of this universe are actually very connected with angelic beings. So I think they're one and the same. It's just like you have like one family group and another family group, I would say they're angelic. They're from the angelic realm. They're mostly messengers of source, but they're also, they have a vested interest in humans because we were actually created in their image, So when humans were created, they created us to look like them. Which I think is really beautiful, honestly. I would rather believe that than that we descended from monkeys, Okay, I just have a hard time with that belief. But sorry, Darwin, I don't believe that. So when in the Bible, when they talk about how we're creating man in our image, I don't know why I had this quote in my head this morning. Maybe it's for this podcast purpose, but we created man in our image. They were creating us to look like them, okay? So the humanoid form, the two arms, the two legs, the head, it's a common form that we see throughout multi-universes because it's a form that works, okay? It's a form that represents what we are as higher beings look like in the higher realms. So that's why we see so much of it, you know, throughout. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have non-humanoid beings. We do. But even those beings carry some humanoid features, you know, like gray aliens, for instance. They have two arms, two legs. So do reptilians, you know, reptilians have that, you know, so we see different iterations of that throughout the universe. But yeah, interesting question.
I cannot wait my reading. I have to wait 6 weeks, 7 weeks.
I know.
But yeah. It'll be perfect divine timing.
That's what everybody always tells me. They always say, oh, I had to wait so long, but then it was like, oh, the timing was perfect. It was like the right time, you know, So for those of you that want to have a reading with me, I do have a long waiting list. Unfortunately, there's only one of me on the planet, but trying to get some folks trained to maybe more folks trained to do this work. But just go on my website, send a message through the website, and my assistant will give you more information on how to book a reading. I was happy to get Debbie on the calendar. Got her on. And actually that's pretty quick. Some people have to wait a lot longer, but,
I was expecting a longer wait. So I was grateful to take.
It was actually, we were able to find a spot for you. So it worked out pretty good. So if you're interested in a reading with me, just go on my website, debbiesolaris.com. That's DebbieSolaris. If you want to find out more about these different star races, I do have a galactic history section on my website. I also have a YouTube channel, which is actually featuring people's readings, but it's a lot of galactic information in those readings. Oh my gosh. Sometimes I listen
to a few of them. It's actually very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Tune into one where you were reading a guy and you were saying, wow, I rarely get someone like you. I'm getting, you know, from different planets and stars.
I just am fascinated by people's stories because everybody's story is so unique, you know, even though there's maybe common themes in some of our stories, but everybody's story is so unique and we've all had interesting soul journeys, you know,
I love the reading that I heard with this gentleman because at some point he was saying like, this is crazy and here's why, and this is amazing and here's why.
Yeah.
There was so much pertinent to what you were sharing that was relating to his life.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's powerful stuff. That's good medicine.
And a lot, I don't really go into the readings with any preconceived notions. I just kind of let the Akashic records guide me. And sometimes I'll see some weird stuff and I'll be like, okay, I don't know why the records are showing me this, but I'm going to share it with my client. And then it's just like a light bulb goes off and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you're telling me this. You know, I get those kind of aha moments all the time with the readings. So,
yay. So we have something to look forward to in 7 weeks.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to connecting with you again. That's for sure. It'll be fun. Yeah. It's fun to see your story. Cause I'm sure it's fascinating, but.
I hope so. I hope I don't disappoint. My genetic readings here on Earth are incredibly boring. I'm like 99% European Jew. It's like, whatever. I'm looking forward to something galactic, much more fascinating that.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be quite a bit.
Explain all this.
Yeah. I'll explain Debbie Dashinger. Yes.
Exactly.
I did the 23andMe test and I always thought I was 100% Italian, but I was only 70% Italian. And everything else was a mix of a bunch of Mediterranean people, like Greeks, Turkish, Egyptian, I don't know, Middle Eastern. I don't know. It was a mix. I was like, okay, I guess I have something a little interesting in there. But I did get 70% Italian, but they kind of broke it down into different regions too, which I thought was really cool. You know, so I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm from everywhere in Italy. I don't know. So
yeah, it's interesting. Same. I did another one on 23andMe as well. And I did think it was, by the way, much the same for mine. And rather than Italy, just Europe and
Europe. Yeah.
But the other population was also Middle East and Spain and Iberia and so forth.
Yeah.
And it just made so much sense because those are the places I love to go to.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. I love the Mediterranean too. So, Can't wait to go back. It's been a few years. So,
anyway. Debbie, what are you next year to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. That's a great question to end with, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, what I dare to dream is helping people to awaken their own galactic gifts, you know. So my next iteration is right now I'm offering a webinar on mastering starseed health, which is going to be July 31st. So we're doing a 3-hour webinar on that. So I'm trying to help people to improve their lives, to tap into their galactic heritage and optimize it rather than working against it, you know. So that's the whole purpose of this webinar. So we're going to be offering starseed enrichment webinars like that. I also want to help train people on how to do their own galactic Akashic readings. So we're going to be training on that next year. I was hoping it'd be this year, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think it'll be next year, but it's going to be just a multi-layered course where we're going to be training them on galactic history and how to tap into the records. And it's going to be quite extensive. So I think people are going to love that. And I hope to get out there more. I've been featured on Gaia a few times. So I will be continuing to have my, you know, wonderful relationship with Gaia TV. But I hope to get more information out there to people and to help people really connect to their star lineage and their star connections. So thank you for that.
And people who are saying, I want to do this health webinar, or I want to be trained in galactic Akashic records, etc. Is DebbieSolaris.com the best place, or is there a specific URL?
I would say just go to my website. Even if you just subscribe to my website, actually on my homepage, you'll see the link to find, you know, to get more information on the webinar if you're interested in doing that. I have other trainings in my training page. We just got two other ones right now, but we're going to get more as time goes on. But I would say subscribe to my website and you'll get the information firsthand.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
This has been great. Thank you so much. Oh, this is wonderful.
Loved it. And yeah. We'll definitely see you soon. I end today's show with this quote from Marco Peralta. We are light, experiencing the densest dimension and the broadest range of emotions, only to learn compassion. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment and share. I read them all and thank you in advance. Next week on the show, I'm going to be featuring Rachel Fiore. She's a spiritual leader. She's the CEO of Masters of Self University. Rachel Fiore is a mystical coach and a channel for sacred wisdom. And for those of you who love healing and love music, I invite you to a sound bath by our band, Lions of Lyra. It's breathwork, it's meditation, it's a musical journey, and it's very healing. You can go to lionsoflyra.com, monthly sound baths. So if you sign up there, you will be notified. Mostly we do our sound baths in Los Angeles. However, we are asked often to go to other states. So when we do, we send you a notification. Again, it's lionsoflyra.com. Love to have you aboard for that. For those who are listening to the podcast and want to see us, go to YouTube, youtube.com/Debbie Dashinger to enjoy myself and my guest. Thank you for joining us. And remember everything Debbie said today about lifting your vibration and the many ways to do it so that your guides can have very easy access to you to help create your dreams.
To contact the award-winning syndicated Dare to Dream radio show, go to DebbieDashinger.com. Keep your excellent feedback and comments coming. Your host, Debbie Dashinger, is an expert at goal achievement, a media personality, an international best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. Debbie leads high-quality teleseminars on how to achieve goals, how to be a self-published best-selling author, and how to get booked on radio. All classes are at DebbieDashinger.com. Debbie's best-selling books are Dare to Dream, This Life Counts, sold on Amazon, and her second book, Wisdom to Success, The Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams, sold online at all bookstores. Tune in again to hear the next inspiring interview guest who has turned their vision into a successful reality. Want more support in making your dreams come true? Go to DebbieDashinger.com. That's www.DebbieDashinger.com. You'll see videos, MP3s, archived interviews, and amazing products sharing the secret steps to making your dreams come true. Remember to dream big with every expectation that your dream will become real. Dreams are free, so free your dreams. What do you dare to dream?
Here I'm standing now, waiting for my time to be all that I can be. It's so easy to forget.